This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Merry Christmas.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know.
That's Rosemary Clooney. As a star of the 1954 film White Christmas, Clooney is one of the singers most associated with Irving Berlin's famous Christmas song. Today we go deep into our archive and celebrate the holiday with an onstage concert and interview that I recorded with Rosemary Clooney in 1997 at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco in an event produced and presented by City Arts and Lectures under the direction of the late Sidney Goldstein. As the citation said in Clooney's 1995 ASCAP Award, she is one of the best friends a song ever had. Clooney had big pop hits in the 1950s, like Come On to My House, Hey There, and Mambo Italiano, but she also made a splendid series of jazz albums. I love her singing and feel so lucky to have recorded this with her. She died 5 years later. Accompanying her, we'll hear Charlie McCarthy, saxophone, Larry Sousa, trumpet, Seward McCain, bass, Colin Bailey, drums, with pianist John Otto, who was Clooney's music director. He died earlier this year. From our archive, here's Rosemary Clooney.
Thank you. Gonna take a sentimental journey. Gonna set my heart at ease. Gonna make a sentimental journey to renew old memories. I got my bag, I got my reservations. Spent each dime I could afford, like a child in wild anticipation. I long to hear that all aboard. 7, that's the time we leave at 7. I'll be waiting up for heaven, counting every mile of railroad track that takes me back. Never thought my heart could be so yearning. Why did I decide to roam? I'm gonna make this sentimental journey. Sentimental journey home. Never thought my heart could be so yearning. Why did I decide to roam? I gotta make this sentimental journey. Sentimental journey. Sentimental journey home.
wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
I would like to go back with you to your childhood when you first started performing.
Really?
Now, I know...
That far.
You used to sing with your sister Betty.
Right.
And when you were girls, you sang together, and I know one of the places that you performed was, what was it your grandfather who was the mayor of Maysville?
Yes, right.
And I know you performed at his campaigns.
Right.
So set the scene for me. What was it like when you were girls performing for the campaign of your grandfather in Maysville, Kentucky? What did you sing? What were you like on stage?
Well, there wasn't a stage, first of all. He was very smart. He used us to gather a crowd. You see, that was, we were kind of shills. We just we would stand on the street corners and sing songs that he liked particularly. There was an old spinning wheel in the parlor, and there's an old covered bridge. Really old songs, and one of them was Danny Boy, of course, because his name was Clooney. My other grandfather's name was Guilfoyle, so. You know, there it was.
Did you like performing, or were you reluctantly trotted out to perform?
I don't remember. I just remember always singing and always knowing that I would sing.
When you were a girl,
yeah,
your parents divorced.
Yeah.
And you and your sister lived alternately at your maternal and paternal grandparents' houses.
Right.
How did it change your world when your parents separated and left you? And
moved? Well, you know, they weren't around a lot to begin with. Daddy was... spent a lot of time in various saloons in Maysville. There weren't too many, but there were enough for him. My mother, on the other hand, she wanted to go somewhere else, somewhere besides Maysville, Kentucky. She worked in a ladies' dress store, and I know that she had a lot of kind of salesmanship and kind of attitude. My sister was a lot like her in that way. But she went to Lexington to work. After all, somebody had to send some money home when we were living with her mother, especially. Because my grandmother, Guilfoyle, had 9 kids. And she was left a widow when the youngest was 3, so she needed the money.
So did you feel abandoned when they separated?
There were so many people around us all the time. So many relatives that I never felt abandoned. Sometimes I would have liked a little more privacy, to tell you the truth.
Well, I asked you to choose a song to sing this evening that would evoke your childhood in Kentucky.
Right.
And so you're going to sing Danny Boy, which you also recorded on your Demicentennial
right.
album. Tell me why you chose this song and what it means to you.
Well, actually, it gets the Irish song out of the way for all the relatives. Why didn't you do an Irish song, Rosemary? A nice Irish song would have been nice in the album. You know how many times I've heard that? So I get Danny Boy right out of the way. First song in the album, Danny Boy. That's it.
This, though, you do this so beautifully.
Well,
would you sing it for us
I
now?
Will, Terry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, Danny Boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen. And down the mountainside, the summer's gone, and all the leaves are falling. It's you must go, and I must bide. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. It's I'll be there in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny Boy, oh, Danny Boy, I love you so. But come ye back when summer's in the meadow, or when the valley's hushed and white with snow. It's I'll be there in sunshine or in shadow. Oh, Danny boy, oh, Danny boy, I love you so.
I think that just kind of sums up one of the many reasons I love Rosemary Clooney. You can take a song I've heard a million times and make me hear it in a way I've never heard it before.
Thank you.
You and your sister Betty started singing professionally, I guess, in the mid-1940s, and you sang with the Tony Pastor Band.
Right.
You know, great, great gig for two young girls. You were still girls.
Yes, Betty was 15.
And how old were you?
18.
You were so young that your uncle had to be your official
guardian,
chaperone.
Uncle George.
Yeah, so here you are, traveling with this big band of course, all men.
Yes.
Two young girls with your uncle as the chaperone.
Yeah.
Was it embarrassing for you to have your uncle traveling with you?
It was kind of no choice, you know, because they said we couldn't sign a contract because we didn't have... So he became our legal guardian. So it was Uncle George or no job. So actually, no, there was no problem with that at all. But to get away from him was difficult.
Did you want to?
Oh, yeah, sure. We tried everything in the world. See, yeah, Betty and I also smoked very early on, see? Couldn't find any cigarettes because George didn't want us to smoke. So I said to my sister Betty, why don't you kind of get friendly with the boy singer, because he smokes, and then get a couple of cigarettes, you know? So we tried. It didn't work.
Okay, so there was the boy singer.
No, because the boy singer went back and told Uncle George.
What?
Fink.
What did it mean to be the girl singer in the band?
Well, there were two of us. So yes, we were the girl singers, and we sat on the side of the bandstand, and mostly we would make up dirty lyrics to other songs. Just for the two of us.
You set me up. Now I'm going to make you sing one.
Well, no, you can't. You cannot. I cannot do it. No, I have grandchildren out there.
Oh, okay. Now, this was the period right after World War II.
Right.
And the songs that were popular during the Second World War had such emotional value for people. And I'm sure you were singing some of those songs.
Surely.
Yes? What did those songs mean to you, and what was your experience of the Second World War?
Well, my grandmother had four kids in the service. And so there were four stars on the flag in the window. And there were a lot of those flags around, you know. And I remember seeing all the movies, you know, with all the movies that were made during the Second World War with all the stars from... I love the Paramount one with Bing and Bob and Dorothy Lamour and Betty Hutton. Yeah, I liked all of that. We missed the people that were away. I remember when the war started. I remember the Sunday that President Roosevelt came on the radio. I remember my grandmother crying and realizing what it meant for her, and then realizing what it meant to the rest of us. Yeah.
I asked you to choose a song from the World War II period, a song very popular then, and you chose to sing I'll Be Seeing You. What does this song mean to you?
If I talk about it, I won't be able to sing it.
Then please sing it.
Okay.
I wouldn't miss this.
Okay. Cathedral bells were tolling, and our hearts sang on. Was it the thrill of Paris, or the April dawn? Who knows if we shall meet again? But when the morning chimes ring sweet again, I'll be seeing you in all the old familiar places.
that this heart of mine embraces all day through. In that small cafe, the park across the way, the children's carousel, the chestnut tree, the wishing well. I'll be seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's warm and gay. I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you. Seeing you in every lovely summer's day, in everything that's warm and gay, I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon, but I'll be seeing you.
That was
Thank
beautiful.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, John. Thank you.
That was beautiful. Let's pick up where we left off. You were with the Tony Pastor Band with your sister, but your sister at some point decided to leave show business.
Well, actually, not show business. She went back to Cincinnati, but she had a television show there.
Oh.
She just didn't want to be on the road anymore.
Oh.
She was then 18. And she had never been to a prom where she could dance, you know, only the ones where we played. So she wanted to go back home and maybe go to some dances and go back to school. And then she had a television show that was called, it was one of those, what were those called? Sock hops at that time? Yeah, something like that. Anybody that's old enough, I think I'm the oldest person in the room, I know it. So my sister went back and did those kinds of things and played records and stuff. And so she was, you know what, I think really, Terry, she did it for me because I'd made a couple of records with Tony's band as a single singer, and Columbia offered me a contract.
Oh, did she think she was holding you back?
Yeah.
How'd you feel about that when she left?
I felt sad. I felt grateful. And I went.
You had your recording contract with Columbia Records,
right,
signed in 1949, and your producer was Mitch Miller.
Hot dog. Here he was.
First single. Yeah, the first single he had you do was Come On to My House.
Well, no.
No, it was, okay.
There were quite a few others.
Before that, okay.
Yes,
but it was
quite
your first gold
first,
record.
Yes, absolutely.
No, he wanted you to record Come On to My House. You didn't particularly want to record.
No.
Why was he so adamant, and why were you so reluctant?
He was right. He knew that I could do it. But I think young people sometimes take themselves so damn seriously that they miss the boat, you know, that they miss the chance. I could have missed that chance if he hadn't been adamant about it.
One of the songs that Mitch Miller produced with you was Hey There, which
yeah.
is a beautiful recording, lovely song, and I'm so glad you recorded it. And I'm going to request that you sing it now for us.
Just easy as anything to do.
Do you love this song?
I like it all right. I'm not crazy about that song either.
Oh.
It's terrible. It's terrible. I like Tenderly that I did. You know, I like that. There was one that I recorded that I hope you missed, a song called Canasta.
I missed it. How did
good,
it go?
Good, good. No, I
won't find out.
No.
Okay, but I will hear Hey There.
You will hear Hey There right
thank
now.
Thank you for singing it.
A little different, but same song. Right, Terry. Hey there, you with the stars in your eyes. Love never made a fool of you. You used to be too wise. Hey there, you on that high-flying cloud. Though he won't throw a crumb to you, you think someday he'll come to you. You had better forget him, him with his nose in the air. He has you dancing on a string. You break it and he won't care. Won't you take this advice I hand you like a mother? Or are you not seeing things too clear? Are you too much in love to hear? Is it all going in one ear and out the other?
Okay.
Stars in your eyes. Love never made a fool of you. You used to be too wise. Won't you take this advice I hand you like a mother? Or are you not seeing things too clear? You're too much in love to hear. Is it all going in one ear and out the other? Ha!
Thank you. Now, while you were having, I think, a pretty difficult pregnancy, you recorded a wonderful record called Blue Rose. And it's used with the Duke Ellington Orchestra, singing songs by Ellington and by Billy Strayhorn.
Yes, and Billy Strayhorn was the reason we could do it.
Billy Strayhorn, in case anyone doesn't know who he was a composer who worked with Ellington, was Ellington's arranger
yes.
and protege, and just a brilliant composer. So my understanding of this record is that you had to basically send in your vocals because you were too sick to travel. With
well, no,
pregnancy.
The doctors didn't want me to travel.
Mm-hmm.
So the band was working on the East Coast, and I was at home.
So Billy Strayhorn worked with you?
Yes, to begin with.
The very
beginning. We got the keys, but he was wonderful. He would wake me up in the morning, knock on my bedroom door and wake me up. I'd get myself together a little bit and go downstairs to the piano, and then he would get the keys. And then he'd play other renditions for me and say, well, I think that you'd be able to do this. Just take this and just learn it and do it the way you would like to. He was responsible. It would not have been possible if it weren't for Billy. He would be in the booth. This is after he went back east and recorded and arranged all the arrangements with Duke, and then came back with the tapes under his arm, and then we'd go into the studio for as long as I could make it, you know. He would make kind of faces at me through the glass, or he would say, you know, and or direct me in a way that I could understand, because by that time we were close friends.
Would you do an Ellington song for us now?
Sure. I'll miss Billy, but I'll do it. They say, into your early life, romance came. And in that heart of yours burned a flame that flickered one day, then died away. Then, with disillusion deep in your eyes, you learned that fools in love soon grow wise. The years have changed you somehow. I see you now, smoking, drinking, never thinking of tomorrow, nonchalant, diamond shining, dancing, dining with some man in a restaurant. Is that all you really want? No. Sophisticated lady, I know you miss the love you lost long ago. And when nobody is nigh, you cry. That's for Billy.
That was beautiful. We were talking about being pregnant as a performer,
yeah.
5 kids, 5 years. It must have been very challenging to be the mother of 5 and a performer at a time when not a lot of women were working. And there was also a kind of happy homemaker image to uphold in America.
Yeah.
What were some of the challenges for you of doing both?
Well, the challenges didn't really rear their ugly heads until about the time when they started school, when there would be separations. And that was very difficult for me. I traveled a lot of times, and I didn't make any bones about it. I'd travel with 2 nannies, and if I could get any more, I would get 3, you know, because 5 kids, you know, under 5 are a handful. So, you know, I just would like for them to let me sleep until 10 if I had worked until 2, please God. And they would let me, you know, they would understand. They would usually send the littlest one in, though, because they knew that he could get by with almost anything. Yeah, yeah, and he could, too.
There was a period of your life when you became addicted to prescription pills.
Right.
Looking back, how do you think it happened? How do you think it got to that point?
Well, they make you feel very good. That's the truth. I cannot tell you. I miss it to this day. I could mention the words, the names of all of them, but... It was before Valium, so I can't say anything about Valium, but I had some that were great. Anyway, it just really kind of eased my mind. I didn't, you know, I could sleep just fine, you know, that was good. And it became a habit very quickly. Then it was hard getting off, because then it took a little more to do what made me feel good to begin with. So I found myself... in a strange place, with things going on, like television talking to me, strange kinds of paranoia, It went on for a while. Then came the day that somebody realized that I was out of control.
Who was the somebody?
Probably my cousin, who was a doctor, and saw me. His name was Sherm Halvey, and he was a wonderful doctor, except that he was not a psychiatrist, but he knew I needed one. And so he introduced me to a doctor that put me in a hospital. And the strange thing is that when I was in the hospital, I can't tell you the name, but there was a very famous comedian that was in the same hospital. So I think, well, this isn't a hospital, you know. What the heck? What's he walking up and down the halls for, you know? So I was in a room with three other people. And it's funny, because as soon as the medication, I got off the medication for a few days. It's funny how you start coming down. It's fast.
Well, you were in the psychiatric wing of
the hospital. Oh, I was in a locked ward, yeah.
So did you look at other people in this ward and say, what am I doing with them?
Oh, no. I liked a lot of them. No, we understood each other. We really did. We really understood each other. We would discuss pills. There was a girl in OT, occupational therapy, in case anybody out there wasn't ever in it. And she was making a painting with her back, with the painting toward the room. So, I mean, the back of the painting was toward the, and she was working so hard. She worked for about 2 weeks. And finally she turned it around, and it was a big two and all, which was like second all. But two and alls was kind of pretty because it had blue on top and red. We loved it. We just loved it. And then at night, you know, we'd get to watch the television for a while. We'd try to find a movie where somebody's crazy in it. Say, would you look at this performance, please? Would you have done anything like that?
But did you tune on one day and there you were in a movie? They were showing maybe White Christmas or Here Come the
God
Girls?
Oh, God knows. No. No. No.
One of the people who really helped you when you were ready to make a comeback was Bing Crosby.
Oh, yeah.
Who you worked with first in White Christmas.
Yeah.
Co-starred opposite him.
Yes, he was wonderful. He was on safari in Africa when I was in the hospital, and somebody had gotten in touch with him, and so I get this letter from him, 3-page letter, that didn't make much sense to me until I was in there for about a week, and then it started to. Bob Hope sent me a bouquet of flowers, which we weren't allowed to have. I could look at them, but they had to be sent out. I don't know how I was going to kill myself with a tulip, but... We weren't allowed to have it. Anyway, here was this big bouquet of flowers, and Bob said, hope it's a boy.
That's really funny.
That's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I said to him later, I said, "What? How did you think?" He said, well, my God, it's the only reason you'd been going to the hospital for the last 5 years. I didn't know why you were in there.
Did that seem funny at the time?
That's when I laughed for the first time.
Really?
Yeah, that's when I thought something was really funny.
There's two things that are very special about the next song that you're going to sing. And one is that you sang it with Bing Crosby, who
right.
was special to you. And the other is that the lyric was written especially for you.
Part of it.
Part of it.
Yeah.
By Ira Gershwin.
Yeah.
And the song is I Can't Get Started. Right. We'll talk about Ira Gershwin and your relationship with him a little bit later. But tell us about this lyric that he wrote for you and why.
This came from an album called Fancy Meeting You Here. I'm going to use a name in here because the line was, when Elvis Presley bows, I just nod. You know, Bing sang that. It's just that you'll see the different words that Ira wrote. He was something. Yeah. Okay. Just play a nice long introduction if you don't mind. I've flown around the world in a plane. I've studied resistance in Spain.
Oh, yeah.
The North Pole I have charted, but I can't get started with you. When I sell kisses at a bazaar, the guys line up from near and from far. Their methods I have charted,
but I can't get started with you. Oh, tell me why am I no kick to you? I who'd always stick to you, fly through thin and thick to you. Tell me why I'm taboo. The market trembles when you sell short. In England, I'm presented at court, and still I'm so downhearted, 'cause I can't get started with you. When first we met, how you elated me, my pet. You devastated me, and yet now you've deflated me till you're my Waterloo. Good grief, I'm not exactly a clod. When Georgie Clooney bows, I just nod. I'm asked to every state ball, still I'm behind the eight ball. Dad's a Wall Street banker, still I'm just a tanker. You're everything a gent is, still I'm non-compos mentis with you. No, I just can't get started with you.
Thank you. Thank you. You're very nice. Thank you.
The song I think you're going to sing is God Bless the Child. Does this song have personal significance for
yes,
you?
Yes, because the last time that I saw Billie Holiday, shortly before she died, I was pregnant with my second child. And she said, I think you're going to have a girl. And I said, do you? She said, yep. And if you do, then I'll be your godmother, because it takes a bad woman to be a good godmother. And so she's Maria's godmother. Yes, it's God Bless the Child. And it's for Maria. Them that's got shall get. Them that's not shall lose. So the Bible said, and it still is news. Mama may have, and Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Yes, the strong gets more, while the weak ones fade. Empty pockets don't ever make the grade. Mama may have, and Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. Money, you got lots of friends hanging round your door. When you're gone and spending ends, then they don't come back no more, no more. Rich relations give crusts of bread and such. You can help yourself, but don't take
too much. Mama may have, and Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got his own, that's got his own. God bless the child that's got his own.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
That was beautiful. Thank you very much.
Rosemary Clooney recorded in 1997 at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco as part of the City Arts and Lecture series. We also heard John Otto on piano, Charlie McCarthy saxophone, Larry Sousa trumpet, Seward McCain bass, and Colin Bailey drums. That concert was recorded nearly 25 years ago. Since then, we've lost three of the people who were on stage that evening. Rosemary Clooney died in 2002. Her music director, John Otto, who we heard at the piano, died earlier this year. The event was produced by the founding director of City Arts and Lectures, Sydney Goldstein, with her then associate director, Catherine Barkos. Sydney died last year. We dedicate this broadcast to her.